we go back a little ways, and he was actually when I first came into AA in 1998. You know, I didn't know anything about getting sober. I knew how to get drunk, and that was about it. And it took me almost a year to get around and get to know people before I even actually asked somebody to be my sponsor. This guy was my first sponsor way back then, and he's been instrumental since then in my recovery, in the good times and the bad and not so good times. He has been a good friend, I'm sure when he took me on, he didn't know what he was getting into, and I was probably one of his first sponsees, and I definitely didn't know what I was getting into, but it worked out well for us. Had a lot of good times together, and what's impressed me the most about his long-term recovery is what he's been able to do in that recovery. He's a man of many talents, and whenever we sit and talk a little bit, he always talks about the miracles of recovery, the miracles of sobriety that he gets, and I've seen those miracles happen in his life over that period of time, and he just keeps telling me it just keeps getting better. It just keeps getting better. And I believe him because I see it. I see it in him. He doesn't just walk the walk. I mean, he doesn't just talk the talk. He walks the walk. He has it in his life. And he gives back to the program. He's one of the founding people, one of the founders of SoberStock, which is a great yearly event. He describes himself as a jack of all trades and a master of none. And I've seen him do a lot of things in being an internet wizard, a talented musician, and now he's an internationally acclaimed Lutherer. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Virgil.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm Virgil. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Virgil.
It's a great day to be sober. It's always an honor to be asked to speak at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. One of the things I learned early on, if you want to get long term sobriety in AA, just sponsor Turner.
That's
you know, when Turner called me and asked me to speak down here, I was whenever he calls me, it's always wonderful, especially if he's sober. And we have quite a history together, not just, you know, just AA and stuff. We had a mutual sponsor as well that we both love, and he's passed away. He's been gone for years, but we still love this guy. And whenever I bring any sponsees through the steps, they always seem to say the same thing to me. They always say, "Wow, it's as if I know Bud," you know. And I'll mention his name at meetings, and people come up to me afterwards and go, I remember him. And it's like, come to find out it's a different Bud. I guess there's a lot of Buds in AA, and we all drank Bud before we came into AA. So, my sobriety date is, I'm pretty sure it's February 17th or 18th, 1996. I could never sort that out because my brain was very squirrely when I came in. I was born and raised in Connecticut, and I moved a lot. My father was a professional drinker, and my first job was cleaning breakage in a beer warehouse. When I was 11, I used to work on Saturdays, and I would, you know, they would have, I would imagine, I guess if you're a forklift driver there, you're going to smash some stuff, especially if you're drinking on the job. Imagine that. So my dad would send me in this little room with chicken wire and all over there, and he would give me all these bottles that were smashed, and I had to clean them with a sponge and rebuild six packs. And that was actually my first paying job. So, and early memories of alcohol, which was abundant in my family. I was raised in two totally separate cultures. I'm just such an odd combination of these heritages. My mom's parents are from Denmark, and my father's parents were from Sicily, so I'm like a pasta pastry or something like that. I don't know. And it was really, it was tough because we'd go over to the Danish relative's house, and they were all nice and polite and no smoking and drinking and things like that. And God bless you and have a nice day. And nobody would ever get out of order, you know. And then we'd go over to the Italians. And I got to tell you, they had a sign up on the wall. And I'll never forget the sign. It was those old world signs that used to make the little signs. You see these back in the 70s. And it said, they had this guy with a big handlebar mustache. And it said, never trust a man who doesn't drink. I remember that sign growing up. And, you know, the highlight of the evening at the Italian relatives was my father jumping up on a chair going, oh, it's hot in here, and he dropped his pants. And that was, you knew that was the highlight of the evening. And my dad took control of the crowd. He really did. And I got somewhat of that legacy. He was a salesman. The guy was a beer salesman, and he brought Canadian beers into New England back in the 60s and 70s. And he had a long tradition of drinking, and his job consisted of drinking with clients. And you can imagine what that did to our family. So the families, you know, the divorce happened when I was 13. Had a couple brothers and a sister that was from my mom's previous marriage, but I didn't know about this until, you know, years on down the road. So just a bunch of stuff. And I went to, I don't know, I think it was 9 different schools by the time I quit in the 9th grade. I went and took my GED test when I was 15 because my mom and I moved down to Florida. And I was a problem child. I never went to school. I just loved to skip. 5th grade, you know, the Sister Mary Elephant wrote sideways on the report card, incomplete, on the 3rd marking period of 5th grade because I skipped the entire marking period. And I learned how to manipulate early on. And at that time in my life, I was, and I know this is an AA meeting, but I was smoking this stuff, but I never exhaled. Anyway, and, you know, I just didn't like to go to school, so I would, it was really awesome, the phone would ring, and I would pick up the phone, I'd go, hello, and they'd say, yes, we need to speak to Mr. or Mrs. Mandanese, and I'd be like, I'm sorry, you have the wrong phone number right in front of my parents. I was getting the letters. I was throwing them away. I was manipulating this, you know, 4th, 5th grade. I was doing this. It was nuts. I was skipping school, getting high, eating Cocoa Puffs, and watching I Dream a Genie. That's what my life goal was at that age. And to carry on this tradition, I ended up joining the Navy by the time I was 17. And I got to boot camp on my 18th birthday, and I got to get drunk all over the world. So I was, and you know what? I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed drinking. I can't come up here and say, oh, as soon as I drank, I just knew I had a problem. I wasn't like that. I just enjoyed drinking, and I did it for a long time. What happened, though, with me was I crossed this invisible line, and I can't tell you exactly when it was, but it all of a sudden wasn't really fun anymore, and I started caring less and less about the people around me and what they thought of me and all these other things, and the alcohol really made me start isolating, and I started getting these really bad feelings that I wasn't able to talk to anybody about, and the sad part was I really didn't even know that I was an alcoholic, although I do remember at one point I looked in the phone book and I saw that there was an Alcoholics Anonymous here in Tampa. I says, yep, they're there, just in case. And, you know, I talk about these miracles in my life, and I was just talking to John. I forgot your name. What's your name?
Mark.
Mark and I were talking right before the meeting, and you start, it's really hard to tell things right when you're there and as things are happening before you, but that hindsight is just kind of amazing, especially if you've been sober a while. You start really thinking about, wow, well, how did this person wind up here? It's almost like that butterfly effect thing. It's like, wow, this little thing just changed my entire world. It's just one little thought from one person. And you can trace these things down to these craziest things. Mark asked me tonight how I got into guitar building. And I told him the story, but it really wasn't. That's not how it began. It began with some woman seeing a flyer for some fair at a church. And that's how I wound up becoming a guitar builder. That's just nuts, because you listen to the story and how you track things down. And the same with my sobriety. As I got sober, I started realizing how God kept on putting these people, I mean the right people. It was this master plan. I couldn't even thought of it. Oh man, it was amazing. And he just put these right people in front of me to make sure I was with this person on that day, so I didn't drink, and then this person. How? It's Hal's fault that I'm here right now. Just for 2 hours. 2 hours, one night. How? So you could all thank Hal if you go home feeling good tonight. Hal saw me at a meeting early on when I came into AA. I was just testing oil. I'm putting my toe in the water, checking you guys out and everything. I call it sniffing butts. You know how dogs do? They just kind of, you know, that's what we do in AA. We start asking, yeah, so, and when you're new, you just want to talk about drinking, right? Isn't that what we do? We try to compare just to kind of see if we fit in or if you fit in. So I was doing that. I was going to some meetings up at the meeting place. And this one guy, I got to tell you, he just said the wrong thing at this meeting one night. And to be honest, he may not have even been directing at me. I found out later on that alcoholics are sensitive people. And that makes things even worse. Because, you know, if you come into AA, obviously it just doesn't work if you're sensitive. So if I were to trace back, if I were to listen to a recording of that meeting, I would have gone, you're kidding me. You were ready to drink because of what he said? And as I was leaving, this guy, Hal, comes up to me and says, hey, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. And he says, you got a minute? I'm like, oh, geez, it's like an Amway thing. And I was like, okay. So then guess what he does? He goes and puts on a pot of coffee. I knew this was going to take a while. And then he pulls out the big book. And he says, I saw you when that guy said that. And I says, oh, you did. Because I didn't have that kind of observance. I couldn't see people around me. I could barely see my hands. Ugh. And I was driving. So he says to me, he says, you know, that guy was drunk. And I was like, what? I didn't know. I thought, like, you guys had strict rules, like you would, like, take away my birthday or something if I drank or something. I thought there was, like, a public execution in AA. I didn't know. I'm new to this. Flogging. And he told me the guy was drunk, and I was just like, that's absurd. I said, you can't drink in AA. He says, oh, yeah, there's lots of people who drink. And I was like, wow. So, and of course, you know, what you hear at meetings, let it stay here. I went home and told my wife, honey, they're drinking. It was pretty funny. So I just start whipping out all these problems on Hal because, oh, he's going to be my savior. You're going to talk me into staying this place? This better be good, buddy. So I just started, I was like a machine gun. Well, what about this? What about that? This guy starts pulling crap out of the big book. First 164 pages, I'll have you know. And he starts giving me answers out of there. I'm like, wow, that's like profound. And that guy charmed me just enough to go to that meeting that next day. So Hal saved my life. God keeps on putting these people in front of me. I keep on getting this big book presented to me. I can't read. I'm like brand new in AA. Words. Ugh. I need it. They gotta have an AA coloring book for the newcomer. I swear to God. See Dick. See Jane. See Dick drink a bottle. You know. I mean, I need crap like that. So, you know, it was the old thing. At meetings, people were like Charlie Brown's teachers. And I wasn't really catching it. But you know what? I found some people I was comfortable around. And I decided I just better hang out with them. Because they kind of make me feel good. And what they do is they make sense. There's this old guy with this gray hair and ponytail. And that guy, he had this big, thick Southern accent. They're all Southern accents to me. I'm from Connecticut, you know. Oh, you're from New Jersey? You Southerners. This guy was kind of interesting. He would share a little bit of something with himself about something that happened to him, and then he would quote something out of the big book. So he'd like align the stories with what his life had, you know, something that happened in his life and how he was able to overcome these things and through the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up having him become my sponsor. A lot of you actually know him. His name is Tim. He works down at Central Office. And, you know, it was funny because he started sponsoring this guy who kept on drinking. I was wondering where my attention was because, like, hey, come on, I haven't had a drink. I'm willing. I'm ready. And I got jealous. It was funny. You just get all these feelings. If you're not going through your steps and addressing these feelings, you don't have a solution. That's how it was for me anyways. I didn't have a solution to my problems. All of a sudden, I just had problems. I knew they were talking about God and that stuff. Oh, they're talking about God. As soon as they started talking about God, I was getting flashbacks of these penguins just smashing my knuckles in the fifth grade, you know. And, I didn't want to deal with it. It wasn't cool or anything like that. But the more people I met and the more meetings I went to, the more these people started making sense to me. And the more I got into the reading and stuff, I was about 5 months sober when they read How It Works at a Meeting, and it was the first time I actually understood what the guy was reading. 5 months. So that tells me, because the more I'm sober, the more I've been doing this the entire time. It's like, as soon as you get 3 months, you go, man, remember how whacked I was at 2 months? Woohoo, I got it now. And then 6 months comes by, and it's like, oh, I thought I had it, but now I really got it. And you constantly do that. That's how it's been for me this entire way. And I picked up last year's chip, 17 years, and it's like, oh, geez, I thought 15 was good. So, and I had asked Bud, when I got 5 years sober, I was like, Bud, this is just amazing. I says, it can't get any better than this. He says, oh, it does. He says, it gets better and better and better. I says, eh, I don't know about that. I says, Bud, the good part is I got walking around sense now. And he says, not you. Then I told him, I says, hey, man, they're having me speak down at Palma Sia at the time when I got sober. That was like the mecca for AA in Tampa. I mean, you go down there, the who of who was in AA. Sandy Beach was listening to me speak. And I told him, I says, hey, man, I'm speaking down at Palma Sia, buddy. He says, oh, that's great. We'll all stand in the corner and sing How Great Thou Art. So, Bud had a way of right-sizing me, you know. And there's no heroes in AA. And after a while, you start questioning some of these things because you see friends that are dear to you that just keep on getting drunk, and you start questioning what is this? What's the secret? There has to be more than the book, because some of you may be reading the book, they may be memorizing it, they're not getting sober. What is this secret? It just seemed so profound, and you know, I still don't know that answer, but one of the things that I did see with Bud, and I keep on seeing things with different people through my life, and, you know, Bud loved the newcomer, unlike I've ever seen anybody in AA. This man just loved the newcomer. And that's the lesson I learned from this guy. I was sitting on his porch for 5 years with him, because we'd get in new drunks every week. That guy would just love them. He loved Turner. He never, ever called anybody an alcoholic the entire time I knew him, except Turner. Had to throw that in there. He said, one night he just goes, he looks at me and he says, Turner, I think you're an alcoholic. And everyone, It was good, man. That guy just, he loved the newcomer. And that's, you know, when I aspired to these people, my first sponsor, Tim, who I ended up just saying, you know what, I can't find the time, or he couldn't find the time to have me go through the steps, and I really want to go the steps, so I figured I'd go straight to the horse's mouth. And that was, so Bud was Tim's sponsor. And Bud became my sponsor for 5 or 6 years before he passed away, and then Tim became my sponsor again. So, and Tim is still my sponsor to this day. And I did talk to him the other day. So, this journey, you know, I keep on thinking, little Bud is in number 33. Every day is full of opportunities. You just got to look for them, Virgil. And I remember having, you know, these. I guess you could call them stagnant phases in sobriety. I believe that there's this hill when you get sober. And now that I started learning guitars, I started learning about angles and math. So you look at this angle starting out at 0 degrees. And sometimes in AA, it's like 0.138 of a steep climb. And those are the easy days. Sometimes it's about 90 degrees, and it feels like that. But my entire journey has been that direction. I haven't turned the other way, where it goes in reverse. That's the way I look at it. I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink. I've found it necessary to kill some people, to plot like some world destruction things, but I have not had a desire to drink. And I fully believe that that was removed. And I wasn't even, I think at the beginning, I was so curious, because I'm kind of nosy. I want to find out what all you people were up to. I was very curious to find out, hey, how is he doing this? And how could Mark over here drink way more than I did, and now he's sober for 6 years? Oh my God, 6 years! I found that just absolutely unbelievable. And when you paint yourself into a corner bad enough with alcohol, you get this thing called willingness, I found out. And I wound up in a very, very dark corner. I don't regret the past, and I don't wish to shut the door on it. I like to bring up some of these things from my past, and I don't wear these as a badge. I wear these as just a clear statement of, this is what I do when I drink alcohol. And at the very end, I just wanted to die. That's what the alcohol did to me. It was my vehicle for me just wanting to die. And I didn't realize some of the hurt that I did until a long time after being sober. We don't get these things. God's almost like Jack Nicholson with, you can't handle the truth, right at the beginning. We really can't. At the very beginning, it's very difficult to face that. So I say to anybody who's brand new and worried about the past, don't worry about it. Don't drink today. Call your sponsor. Get to a meeting. Do what you can do today to try to work on this cool thing called serenity. It'll happen. It takes time. I know this stuff just takes time. That's what it's been for me. And the squirrel cage just starts going woo, 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 woo. At the very end, I was telling my wife that I was planning on killing myself. My wife's mother came home from work one day. This was back in the 80s. And she found her oldest son hanging from a tree in their backyard. Years later, when our daughter was two years old, Angel was two, her other brother went into the woods with a shotgun and took his head off. So this woman had lost both of her brothers, and I just found it like routine to threaten her with suicide. That's what the alcohol did to me and the selfishness and the self-destruction. And I really didn't care if that pissed her off. I wanted some attention. That's what the alcohol did to me. It made me not care. And you read about the self-will run riot. 2 years sober, all of a sudden it dawned upon me that when we were living out in Tucson, Arizona, she was my wife was donating plasma to pay the bills because all my money was going to the bartender and the drug man. That's what I did, you know? So when I get up in the morning sober, I have this thing called gratitude, just a little bit now, that's sarcasm, where I get up and I go, wow, I don't have to be that person today. God has given me a gift of sobriety. What I do with that sobriety is my gift back to Him. Practice these principles in all our affairs. That's a tall order. I love these last three steps. Bud got pissed if you called them maintenance steps. He says, they are not maintenance steps. Maintenance steps are like if you put an oil in a car. What's going to happen with that car when it has 400,000 miles on it? He says, it probably ain't going to get 400,000 miles by just changing the oil. He says, exactly. He called them growth steps. And when I look at those, I know that I have to, you know, step 10, continue to take personal inventory. We were wrong. Not probably admit it. It's not probably, it's promptly. That means if I go to bed at night feeling a little off about something that I did, I really need to address that so I can sleep a little bit better, hopefully tomorrow night. You know, there's these little things in there. I love somebody shared at the meeting the other day, and you know, long-term sobriety, and the guy had no idea what God's will is for him. I have no idea what God's will is for me. Well, it's interesting because that step, it tells us that whatever will we're doing, we've got to work. It's an action step. It's an action step. Because it says right there, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Carry that, huh? Carry. That means I got to work on it. That means I have to do something. This is an action work. And for me, I've learned two things. It's taken me this many years to figure out that there's two things that God wants from me on a daily basis. First one is don't drink. That's a good one. And the other one is to help others. You know, a lot of people call that two-stepping, but guess what? There's a bunch of steps in between there that I have done over and over and over again. I didn't graduate on year one and say, hey, I got all my steps done. That was a wonderful thing about Bud. If Bud was your sponsor, you went through your steps over and over and over again. And when I go through steps with a sponsee, I'm going through my steps again. I go through my steps along with my sponsees out of the big book. Imagine that. I don't have to get it from some charter hospital or Dave's quick recovery unit 5683BC section 4. You go through the first 164. And I love this group. I was thinking right before this meeting, I says, when you guys get enough people to pack this place and you start getting some resentments in a coffee pot and they're going to break off into other groups, you're going to have two groups. Your first two groups that are going to break off of here are going to be called the doctor's opinion. The other one's going to be called the spiritual experience. Because, to me, those are the only things that I've ever read in the big book. I had a good friend years ago. I told him, I said, you know, I've never read the stories in the back. What do you mean you've never read the stories in the back? I said, never read them. As a matter of fact, I walked into a big book study one night and they were reading one of them. I was like, and it was a big book study and I didn't know the stories. You don't have to read the stories to stay sober, I found out. You don't have to read the stories. You could make your own story, I found out. You could make your own story in AA. That's the awesome thing. We all find little things in our adventures here in AA. We find what works for us, and I'm not saying buffet style. I'm just saying we find the things that we love in life and we start pursuing in life. You know, I didn't come in here to get somber. I came here to get sober. So what I found out, and by the way, I have no watch on me. This could go till 11 o'clock. So somebody please throw something at me when I got like 45 minutes left. So, I've been going for 29 minutes. Record. So what happens is, for me, is I know that I kept on asking at the beginning all these specific answers to my specific problems, and I didn't know that the answer was in the steps. And what's so funny is you could read those steps 1,000 times. You could have them memorized. You could say them in 20 different languages, but you don't really know the steps until you've actually gone through the steps and actually attempted these things that they asked for. And we try our best when we go through them. I didn't do good my first time, I got to be honest. I missed a lot of stuff. I missed that thing with my wife donating plasma. And all of a sudden that hit me at 2 years sober. More will be revealed. I love that saying. I was like, oh man, they ain't kidding. So I keep on finding out more and more stuff about myself because this is about growth. I have to be constantly doing this inventory, and guess what? I find stuff all the time. What's wrong? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, it kind of makes life interesting. Heck, I mean, I haven't reached sainthood yet, I got to tell you that. So I keep on having these discoveries, and I'm coming over here. This is the best clothes I could find. I was telling somebody outside the meeting, I did this big mistake about 3 years ago. I started wearing elastic clothing. And don't wear elastic clothes, like loose fitting, really nice, comfortable ones, like 24/7, just elastic, man. It's cool. Because I was asked to speak a couple months ago, and I had to pull this suit out, and I go to put it on, and I was like, I went and spoke, and I was like, man. So we go to Ice Cream Anonymous next month. So, but you know, my life since I got sober, it's been awesome because I just keep on. It's about this rediscovery on a daily basis for me. I love meditating. I love sitting on my back porch with a cup of coffee and a bowl of cigarettes, and I just part of the two food groups. And I just sit there talking with God. I talk to God like he's George Burns. Remember, Oh God, that movie? I envision him like just this really cool guy that just shakes his head at us all the time. Goes, oh, man, yeah, nice, you know. I have my own concept of God today. And at first, I was really looking for that. That was one of the big things I was looking for because the God that I grew up just it didn't seem to work. And after years of sobriety, I've come to realize it's all the same God, you know. And it's I wasn't ready for that stuff when I was a kid. I didn't have that desperation I had today. I didn't think I needed help, put it that way, when I was growing up. And the older I get, the more help I realize I need. And and God keeps on giving me just this wonderful abundance in life. And I was doing this search for the longest time. It was first a search for God, and I had my first temporary sponsor tell me it was the one thing that I remember. He passed away actually last week, Russ, the meeting place. And when I was telling him about the God thing, and I grew up with this religion and blah blah blah, he says, Virgil, keep God simple. He's going to do everything you could ever ask for. And I was like, okay. So I just tried to start keeping God simple without this complexity that I grew up with, because I had to memorize a lot of stuff in parochial school, I got to tell you, when I was an altar boy, and how much wine you're supposed to pour and all this stuff, and ring this bell and then the frankincense and blah, blah, blah. So I just, I started just praying to this God that I wasn't sure about, and it started happening for me. And at first it was just, all it was is I felt that God was helping me get through the day. And I decided to start testing this God, and I started, you know, asking different things that were not selfish, you know, which is pretty tough to do for somebody like me. And I would get into these predicaments sober, and I would start praying for all these specific things, and nothing was happening. And I couldn't understand how I was supposed to fix this problem. And I'll give you a specific one I love talking about these specific things instead of being Mr. Vague up here. 10 years sober, the IRS wanted, I don't know, it was like 12 grand from me. And I had about $200 in my bank account. I didn't know what to do, you know. And I was praying for, oh, man, if this client just goes for this, and I know I can pay that, and I can do this, and I'll start making payments, and blah, blah, blah. I'm asking for some crazy shit, I'm going to tell you. And finally, I just gave up, and I realized what I needed to pray for. I says, God, I finally figured out. I know what I need. In the middle of this storm with the IRS, I says, I need a sponsee. And he gave me two. If I told you who they were and if you knew who they were, you'd be like, wow, you were sick. And it wasn't Turner. And it was so awesome. It was just so awesome. Because you know what that did? It took me out of that whole self thing. Because I didn't have to worry about it. I was working my butt off, which I needed to do to actually pay for this. And I just wanted to help this newcomer. These newcomers, two of them. And it was spectacular. And stuff just happens the way it's supposed to happen. A few weeks later, my wife's grandmother passed away, who had amassed a fortune, gave it to her daughter. And then my mother-in-law offered to give us the money to pay the IRS. And she says, you don't have to pay me back, but we paid her back. You know, within a couple of years, she was paid off. And everything just, it seems like everything, no matter what happens, things just have them, a way of working them out. 2 years feeling a little complacent. It was September, and it was my belly button birthday. And I go up to the meeting place, 2 years sober, get out of the meeting, and so he says, what's going on, Virgil? I says, it's my birthday. They says, really? How long have you been sober? I says, belly button birthday. He goes, oh. And I was like, come on, man. We can have a little fun. It's my birthday. Yeah, we're not going to drink. Let's have some cake or something. And it was really funny because I got mad. And I just felt that same old way of just the, what about me and my friends and my needs and my desires? And I got in my car and I was mad. I was mad. I was like, I know it sounds so stupid and trivial, but gosh, I'm an alcoholic and I'm a sensitive person. And I get in my car and I look at the clock, and the time thing on there said it was 12 after 8. And I get home. My wife says, honey, it's your birthday and I got a special gift for you later. And I was like, yes, I scored. She says, I think there's a message for you on the phone. And I was like, okay. So I go over the phone and I play this message. And the message was a friend of mine, and his name was Turner, and he says, I'm drunk and I need help. And the timestamp was 8:12. So I told my wife, I says, I got to leave. I said, where are you going? I says, Turner's sick. He needs some help. She says, it's your birthday. I says, I know. This is awesome. She didn't know. She didn't understand. So I went and picked up Turner and went to a meeting and found my friend Jeff. And then we brought him up to Bud's house and we threw him in the hot tub at 375 for about 45 minutes. It didn't get him sober, you know. We tried cooking. He was clean, but he was still slurring his words. He was having a few vowel movements. And eventually, after, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours, he started coming to. You were doing intravenous coffee and stuff and giving him some. I remember going to Taco Bell. We threw a couple tacos down his throat and then got him a chocolate bar and some soda, and he didn't hurl. It was nice. It was a blessing. But, you know, taking him up to Bud's house, I saw this dynamic. And I don't want to talk about anybody's personal incomes or anything, but Turner was living in a pretty nice house. And Bud lived in, they don't like you calling that, and I hope I'm not offending anybody, but he lived in a trailer. It's a manufactured home, politically correct way to call a trailer. And to see Bud open that up for a guy who was doing pretty well to do, and see that? You saw this thing that's just, everything is just stripped away. And it's just two drunks. And I found a magic in that. I didn't get home till like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, on my birthday. And what a great birthday gift. I know that sounds weird, but my gosh, that was probably one of my best birthday gifts ever. You know, just to see somebody have a chance. I want others to experience this freedom, the bondage of self, and all these wonderful gifts we get out of this program. And I'm just totally, totally amazed and shocked by how many cool things can happen to a person who stays sober. After a while in sobriety, I was trying to figure out what I really wanted in life. And that's not an easy conclusion to come to. And I finally figured it out. It just came to me one morning on the back porch, and I was like, I know what my goal in life is today. And it's this thing called serenity. That's what I want in life. I don't want money and friends and popularity. I want this thing that's called serenity. That's where I don't have a care in the world. That's where I can wake up going, all right, another day, instead of, damn, another day. That's what I started searching for. And it started happening. And I really started searching within myself I says, okay, you're sober. Now what are you going to do? Because I remember sitting on that bar stool and I was talking all sorts of smack, saying, oh, I'm going to do this. These wonderful, grandiose ideas. And I did a lot of that back in the days. And after getting sober, you start talking that stuff, and then you realize you end up doing it. That's the difference between a drunk who's still drinking and a drunk who's found recovery. And that's pretty awesome. So I started chasing and following my dream, and it started years ago. First time was with a good friend from the meeting place. He called me up one day and says, hey man, this guy from this company wants to talk to you. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was sitting down there in his living room, and this guy, I started getting into computers. You know, at first my brain, I was 9 months sober and I just failed miserably at this job, this company. They sent me through 2 weeks of training. My brain was mush and I got this resentment for myself. It was huge. And I hated myself for all the drugs and alcohol I put in my body, because I was blaming that on the reason why I couldn't absorb anything. And I had a total resentment out of that whole deal, and the resentment was towards me and what I did to myself. And as time went by, my sponsor told me at the time, he says, it'll get better. Give it time. I was like, but when? And within a couple years after that, I started learning computer programming. I mean, come on. My God. That's just mental. If you think about the difference between the two, that's just crazy stuff. How could something like that happen? So this guy hired me at his company. I worked for them for 3 years. And I was doing computer animations and just all sorts of cool stuff. I was building networks, and I was Mr. Computer Guy. And that was pretty phenomenal. So I was following a dream. And then things didn't work out because a co-employee problem with there who was threatening other employees. So I ended up working at the Tampa Tribune for a little while. And I found, you know, it's funny, I found myself opening up my own web design company. I owned that for about 5 or 6 years, which was fun at the beginning. And then at the end, I didn't care for it. And I was okay with that. And because I realized that I change and people could change their mind along the way. And I'm going to my cell and just saying, you know what? Find another dream, dude. So September, 3 years ago, I sold that company. It was the most serenity I ever had in my life. I was just like, wow. On the back porch, it was just spectacular. And a series of fortunate events had this whole life change right before me. And it was I was teaching guitar at the time, so I was being able to make money with that, and going to meetings, sponsoring people, taking people through the steps, doing virtual meetings online, doing meetings at my home group, and then all of a sudden I just got hit with this curveball with one of my students. His father was a cabinet builder, and he talked me into building guitars, so I started building guitars out of the blue. Never built a guitar in my life. I had no clue about how to do that. I learned how to do inlay, spent 3 months learning inlay. Then I built a guitar, and we're alcoholics. We can't just build a simple guitar. I had to take a year to build this thing, about 12 hours a day. And it was just featured in one of the largest magazines in the world, Guitar World, in their September issue. And I sold the guitar for $17,000. Most people build a guitar and then their first one they throw in the garbage, but that one made a little history. And then this year I got picked up by a largest music equipment distributor out of Japan, and I already shipped them 2 guitars this year. So I'm like building guitars on my back porch. I mean, I've been playing guitar since I was 13, since I was a kid. I've been an artist my whole life, and so now I'm just doing this crazy thing that I wasn't expecting. I love it. And I got a wife and 2 daughters. One daughter is, Angel was 3 years old when I got sober, and she just turned, she's 20 now. And then we have Nicole. Nicole was 9, so after 10 years we were like, wow, that goes by fast, so let's have another kid. And I had already read the manual how to do it, so we had the second kid. And so it's nice. I have one of the things that happens in my house is no drama. It's just the strangest thing. It's kind of peaceful. You go in there and nobody's screaming and yelling at somebody else like I grew up with. It's pretty kick back. It's the same thing every day, and I build guitars, and the little one goes, my wife is a home engineer, domestic engineer, or something like that. She does inlay in the yard, so she has this whole cool yard. She just, that's her passion. And I'm a member of the old school group, but I've been pretty vicarious lately, and I've been going to other meetings. So I'm checking out different meetings. I just went to this, there's a Sunday morning one right over here, right around the corner. I went to this past Sunday. That's a nice meeting. I'm trying to find some meetings a little closer to my house. This is closer. I might have to come back here. So anyways, it's been a wonderful experience getting sober, and not getting sober actually sucked. Staying sober was cool. I hope I don't have to get sober again. I really didn't like that process. I didn't like the feelings I felt. I didn't like that two-dimensional thing I saw out of my backyard. It looked like somebody just put a print right in front of my, said, here's life. Enjoy it. And I'm glad today that I know that I'm an alcoholic and that I just can't put this stuff in my system. Because I got a little furry guy in my stomach who's just, he's dormant, but he's still sitting there. And all I got to do is wet him with alcohol, and he's going to say, send more now. And I know he's there, and I'm okay with that. I just don't feed him any alcohol. And that's about it. I appreciate Turner asking me to speak up here tonight. And no matter where you're at on your journey, keep coming back. This is the place where miracles happen, and the adventure and all the work is out there, you know. So, thanks.
Thank you, Virgil. And thanks for not sharing some of those other stories. Those other stories that we have, there are quite a few of them. One time he was trying to take me to Axe or to the hospital or whatever, but Bud told him to buy me, I was starting to detox, and Bud told him to buy me a quart of beer. And he took me up to the old little Chevron station that's right by the old school group. And he got me a warm quart of malt, what was it called?
Oh, like Colt 45.
Old English. It was Old English,
old
I think.
English.
Yeah. So, anyways, but yeah.